It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Wisconsin Army National Guard is citing a significant drop in new recruits and enlistment trends dipping to new lows, reflecting some broader trends. We peel back the layers with your questions and comments about the National Guard and its missions. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand is Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander for the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Lieutenant Colonel Hellenbrand, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, take us inside this issue. What is going on with these enlistment trends?
Absolutely. I've been in this role as the Recruiting and Retention Commander for just about 5 months now, but so there's a plethora of factors that are impacting us with recruitment right now. And I'm sure that you and our listeners are aware of the fact that this isn't just a Wisconsin National Guard problem. It's actually a Department of Defense-wide problem. But I'll talk specific to the issues we're seeing here locally in Wisconsin. And so I'd say the main issue here is that the National Guard, we've been, although we're located in 70 communities across the state of Wisconsin, we have really been less visible and participatory in our communities over the past several years. We implemented security measures at our armories after 9/11, and then, of course, we all put up barriers and closed our doors as a result of the COVID-19 mitigation. So being unseen it has resulted in an impact that many of our neighbors just don't know us anymore. They don't tend to know people who serve in the National Guard. They don't know about our mission, and they don't necessarily know what we do or why we're important.
If I could push back there for a moment, I mean, looking back at 2020, a historic year for the National Guard. There is civil unrest, Guard called up. There is a really scary new pandemic, and the National Guard stepping in so many logistical ways and other ways I might not even be aware of. But to me, that is very much visible in terms of how I saw the National Guard. What do you make of that?
I'm so glad that you saw it that way. And I think that the public did too. We were really, we were a very flexible force for the state of Wisconsin in so many ways. You know, also we helped with keeping the polls open with election support. Mm-hmm. We assigned medical professionals to fill critical care gaps in our facilities, the COVID testing, the vaccination, so many awesome missions that we conducted in order to support Wisconsin. So we were really visible, like you said. What we weren't able to do, though, was to continue our recruitment efforts during that time frame. Our schools closed, our communities closed and stopped having events. And so we really lost our momentum when it came to recruitment.
Can you throw out some numbers for us? Where are your recruitment numbers currently in relation to your goals?
I can. Unfortunately, we are already 25% behind mission this year. We're actually on pace to end our year about 50% short of our recruitment mission. And this adversely impacts our organization's readiness. And readiness means our ability to respond to state and federal missions.
And if you could go more deeply into that, how does that translate to readiness? How does that translate to workloads?
Well, whenever we have less soldiers, the workload is greater on the individuals who we do have. Additionally, we are really becoming a more flexible and agile organization, and we're offering flexibilities to our soldiers in times of activation and as well as in times of them just reporting for duty. We're offering alternate training and drilling options. We're offering them opportunities to serve virtually. And we're also redefining what hardship means. So sometimes we've got service members who need to take a knee and or who shouldn't be called upon to activate on short notice because of maybe childcare issues or a really demanding career outside of the military. And so we lose the opportunity to have flexibilities and to give those types of flexibilities to our soldiers in times of need here locally or even nationally.
I think the messaging in the past, though, has really been steeped into us 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. Do you find then, as I hear about your using the word more flexibility, has the Guard been too inflexible in the past with its commitments for drills?
We were 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, and I got to live that for many years of my earlier service. But I would say that really since 9/11, we've been relied upon more so locally and nationally and more regularly. So I think that we've had these mission requirements, and they've been quite demanding. So because of who we are and what we stand for, mission accomplishment was so important to us that we didn't necessarily understand how to exercise flexibility for our force. And maybe we were too stringent. I know even as a junior leader, I didn't understand that I had the ability to exercise flexibility for my soldiers until I got a little bit older and more senior and really, really effective that helped me become a better leader. And in fact, becoming a parent has really helped me become a better leader too. So now I understand what our part-time soldiers are trying to do as they work to balance their work, their life, and their military. And it is not easy. Everyone is so busy these days, and we're very demanding. So I think that we've all learned over the years, and in particular over the last few years when we've activated over and over again in support to Wisconsin's COVID response, that I would say we've seen the light and we've become a far more flexible force than ever before.
Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand with us, Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander for the Wisconsin Army National Guard, as we look at recruitment challenges and get your thoughts along the way, your questions as well at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm wondering about the questions around when the Guard is called up and the responses to the actual missions you've been on, which have had much more visibility in the pandemic and in civil unrest. How do you think people have responded in ways who have voiced concerns about how the National Guard is being used at the local level?
Well, you know, the citizens of Wisconsin are entitled to their opinion about the military and politics, et cetera. And I think that Wisconsin is quite a polarized state at this time. And so people have an opinion about the way that their military has been used, whether good or bad. But what I really want to say is that although we feel supported by our communities and neighbors, survey data tells us that these days Wisconsin citizens have a really low propensity to serve. In fact, among the lowest in the entire nation.
Why do you think that is?
Well, that visibility piece that I talked about before is one major issue. But we also have, in order to join the military, it could be quite intimidating, just the thought. If we already don't have high propensity to serve, then probably people aren't interested in learning and listening about what the Guard has to offer. So it's intimidating. Serving is a selfless commitment, and it's also a time commitment. We have tough training requirements that are both physical and mental, can be really intimidating to think about joining the military. And then, of course, our mission is potentially dangerous, too. We also have really rigorous enlistment standards. So in order for us to even qualify people, we're pulling from a small category of talent in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, we're limited by age, by medical and physical and body composition standards. We have relatively high obesity rates. We have to have people pass the ASVAB test, And then we've got moral and legal standards as well. So there's a whole bunch of red tape that keeps us from qualifying people into the force, which makes it tougher on us as well. And then, of course, the economy is impacting us too. We have a really low employment rate here in Wisconsin, and I'm sure you know, a really high labor participation rate, which yes. means that there aren't a lot of people seeking employment lately.
Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand, the Wisconsin Army National Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander, call in with your questions, your comments about the National Guard, 800-642-1234. Your experience is welcome as well. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Army National Guard is speaking out about a sharp decline in new recruits enlisting for service, and the outlook for this year is not much better. Call in with questions, your reaction to the National Guard recruitment concerns, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand, the Guard's Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander. Let's bring in Paul in La Crosse. Hi, Paul. What is your question?
Hi. Thank you for answering. I was just wondering, my brother was in the Army Reserves several years back, but I was just wondering, has basic training has changed at all, or has it remained pretty much the same for recruitment?
Paul, thank you for that question. Lieutenant Colonel Hellenbrand.
Thank you, Paul, and thanks to your brother for his service. Yes, the basic training has drastically changed and adapted. We really, the structure of basic training remains the same, where it is very structured, very disciplinarian, physically focused, but also the military has a really significant focus on overall wellness and mental fitness now too, as well as teaching leadership in ways that invite vulnerability and emotional intelligence. And so these are some things that I did not receive many years ago when I went through basic training, and I'm happy to report that we're adapting in ways that is producing multidimensional leaders out of basic training these days. It's still really hard. It's still really challenging, and it's tough for especially young folks to be away from home, but it's a short period of time that changes people for life.
I wonder, walking in two different worlds a bit here, I mean, what should employers know about their workers who juggle their service in the National Guard with a full-time job and being called to active duty or a longer deployment? These are like two different worlds.
They really are, Kate. Thanks for recognizing that. So what is really interesting is, number one, the value that our soldiers bring to the table as an employer, a few things. So generally, we're highly educated, we're drug-free, we are structured and organized, and we live by the Army values. We work well in teams, we accept challenges very well, and we're good at conflict resolution. Also, that our military service is protected legally, so that they have a responsibility to support our soldiers when duty calls. So generally speaking, this just it impacts employers when we're not in a pandemic. It impacts employers very little. When we only drill on one weekend a month and about 2 weeks in the summer, it has lesser impact on our employers. Although the COVID pandemic has definitely exacerbated impacts to employers over the past few years, our organization is working hard to get back to some semblance of balance for employers so that they can support their soldiers on and after they've served on duty.
Let's bring in another call. Amy is joining us from Madison. Amy, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Hellenbrand. This has been really interesting. I was just wondering, I have two children who are getting close to college age. Are there any benefits or things that you could talk about that would balance kind of the challenges you've already described, some tangible benefits for them if they were to join?
Yes, Amy, absolutely. Thanks for that question. We have bonuses and pay for our soldiers. We've got college incentives. And in many cases, these school benefits can be transferred to spouses and children, which is an incredible benefit. We've got great insurance. But we really realize that the monetary incentives are only part of a person's motivation. And many young people are not really thinking about how they're going to pay for college if they choose to, or really what's next tangibly. They have to have something special that calls them to serve, and they have to believe in selfless service and teamwork. We also will offer split training options, which is unique to the National Guard, and that means that for individuals who want to go to college, they don't have to miss or delay college. They can actually go to basic training, come home, do a year at college, and then the next summer go to their skills school and then come home and continue college. This is an example of what I did back when I was junior, and I graduated right on time with my peers and colleagues, and I didn't have to miss anything. So these are some of the options that we offer. But I guess another thing that I would also really like to highlight is the unique challenges and the leadership training that we receive. It's quite incredible. And it really has, for me and for many of us, it has shaped us as we've grown up. It has changed the trajectory of our whole lives. For me, I would say that my drive is uniquely high, and I have a mental toughness that really, it gives me the confidence that I need to deal with any challenge in life.
Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand with us, Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander, as we talk about recruitment efforts within the Wisconsin Army National Guard. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dwayne in Wausau. Dwayne, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. It was interesting that this was on today, topic, because this morning I read on my newsfeed, a Republican senator is introducing legislation to allow potential recruits that maybe have seen a mental health expert when they were like in high school or for like, you know, ADHD or a host of other things that were a no-go to serve. And they're going to try to look at that and change that. And that would bump up recruiting. And as far as people getting, you know, going into the service, I was in Army, I have a son in the Navy and son in the Air Force. It's such a small window of time in your life, but it will reap benefits for ever, you know.
Dwayne, thank you so much. And, you know, looking at legislation that would perhaps loosen some of these strict regulations, Lieutenant Colonel Hellenbrand, what do you make of that?
Thank you, Dwayne, for your service and for your question. Great topic. So in the past, any applicant who'd been seen for behavioral health or was prescribed any medication for behavioral health would be automatically disqualified. And that is not the case these days. So now we have a waiver process that will allow applicants to be considered medically and can be qualified for behavioral health type care, for seeking that type of care. So I'm excited to report that we are more progressive that way. And internal to the military, we are smashing stigmas attached to behavioral health. We have so many services for our service members, and we talk openly about, especially as leaders, we talk openly about our own struggles and our own paths to seek care and that balance and that overall wellness.
I want to circle back to workforce issues, because last year more than 150 Wisconsin National Guard members, they completed the CNA training, the Certified Nursing Assistant, you know, to really address the nursing shortage specifically in nursing homes. Is the Guard's mission to fill workforce crisis gaps, you know, being affected by lower, you know, recruitment numbers?
We are very proud of that CNA program that we stood up on very, very short notice with the help of DHS. and their and our soldiers' accomplishments when they went and functioned in these CNA capacities. And some of them went on to serve as CNAs in their full-time capacities, as well as it opened a door for them to become other medical types of professionals. So that was a great program. No, not necessarily. Our mission is not necessarily to fill those gaps, but in Wisconsin's time of great need, I can say very proudly that we adapted and overcame missions at the request of our governor in ways that we are all very proud of. We are a versatile workforce. We are multidimensional, as I mentioned before. That's unique to the National Guard.
We're out of time. Lieutenant Colonel Hellenbrand, thank you for joining us.
You're so welcome, Kate, and thank you to all of our listeners.
Lieutenant Colonel Shannon Hellenbrand, Recruiting and Retention Battalion Commander, you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about Irish culture for this St. Patrick's Day.
Irish dance has been booming for quite some time in Milwaukee, where there are multiple dance schools. If you're not familiar with this art form, Irish dancers typically keep their arms straight at their sides while their legs quickly leap, kick, and shuffle across the floor. Usually, St. Patrick's Day is a huge day for dancers as they travel across the area performing for people. While the pandemic has impacted their events this year, dancers and instructors have found a way to keep hopping and stepping in a safe way. So, to celebrate that dedication to the Irish culture, we're revisiting this story from 2014. Back then, my sister and I attended an Irish dance competition, known as a FESH, in Oconomowoc. We were Irish dancers when we were much younger, so it was super fun to watch the talented dancers, see how the reels and jigs have evolved, and to hear the live music. Take a listen.
Oh, fesh? No one knows what a fesh is. A fesh is an Irish dance competition. It is craziness, but it's a competition where kids get to come and dance. We have 930 competitors. They come, they do two steps of a dance on stage. We have reels, we have jigs, we have slip jigs, hornpipes, treble jigs, sets. I'm Maura Kathleen Heck, and I'm an Irish dance teacher and owner of Cashel Dunhee School of Irish Dance in Milwaukee.
It's just really fun. You get to fly, which is awesome, and I don't know, it just takes everything else that you're stressed about away, and you just get to focus on dance. My name is Siobhan McPhail. I'm 14. I dance with Kinsella Academy of Irish Dance, and I live in Milwaukee. I think it's definitely a sport because you need to have stamina and strength and flexibility and anything that any other athlete needs.
I'm Mariana Pop George. I'm 13 years old, and I dance for the Trinity Academy, Mequon, Wisconsin, or Milwaukee. I competed in the under 14 Open Championship category, and I just finished my treble jig. This dress, it's baby blue. It's a lot of white. It has a lot of accents on it that's like a Celtic design, and it's kind of like a tennis skirt style. And then my mom added some blue crystals along the sketching of the skirt and then to the bodice.
The dresses many years ago used to be more authentic, and they would actually had Irish designs on them from this book called The Book of Kells. They've evolved into more geometric shapes and bling, as everyone calls it. And the hair, I can't. There's folklore about, you know, oh, back in the days of ancient Ireland, like they all curled their hair and it, so it bounced nicely as they, you know, were dancing down the aisles and dancing at the crossroads. When I was younger, we actually had to put the little pink curlers in our hair and sleep on them overnight, and your head against a window if you're driving to a fesh in Ohio. Oh, it was so painful. And then it took, you know, an hour to uncurl them in the morning. Now they're wigs and they take 5 minutes.
I like to put the wig on the Americans. My name is Sean Beglin, and I am the owner and director of Beglin Academy of Irish Dance. Before I finished high school, I was with Riverdance part-time, which still is a big Irish dance show. I left high school and got a call 2 days later that Riverdance wanted me full time, and my first city was Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Riverside Theatre. We're very lucky to be in Wisconsin. What is great about this city is that in Milwaukee we have Irish dance plus Irish music plus Irish singing plus Irish language, that we have Celtic studies. There is such a bloodline of Irish running through this area of America that you can't get away from it.
Those were the voices of Irish dancers at a FESH in Oconomowoc back in 2014 in honor of St. Patrick's Day. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, they are out with an annual Opie Awards in honor of National Sunshine Week that is underway. News leaders shine a light on access to public information and highlight work in transparency and accountability. Call in with your questions and comments about freedom of information and open government, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bill Leaders is president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. Bill, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. I should actually say Happy Sunshine Week to you.
Yes, it's a very happy Sunshine Week.
Well, you know, promoting things like public information access and open records, open government meetings, just taking the temperature a bit here in Wisconsin. How are we doing with openness? Are governments becoming more or less transparent over time?
Well, I think Wisconsin has a tradition of fidelity to the ideal of open government. I think a lot of public officials are acclimated to the idea that it's the public's right to know, you know, what happens in meetings by government officials. It's the public's right to have access to the records that are produced and maintained by public agencies. I think those are concepts that are pretty well accepted here. You run into problems, though, in certain areas. There's various problems that come up in terms of the costs that are associated with obtaining records. There are some situations where authorities decline to release records where they should. We've had a couple of lawsuits involving those situations recently where the courts have ruled that the public authority wrongfully withheld information when the requester asked for it. So that kind of thing comes up, and there's a constant problem with delays in terms of records responses, so with authorities taking way too long to respond and provide records when they are asked to do so.
What do you think is the significance of transparency and openness of Sunshine Week and what it's promoting in this era of misinformation and in an era of low trust in media?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one of the essential tools that media have to do their job in terms of reporting on what government officials are doing. But the open records law and the open meetings law serve everybody, from parents who are concerned about what happens at their kid's school, to contractors who are looking to bid on public projects. They want to know as much as they can about the process. There's businesses use the open records law all the time to obtain information. So it's widely used by people all across the state. And it's one of the things that protects our democracy to make sure that government functions as well as it can.
I think that's a really good point, that this is not just about journalists and their trade and getting access to information. It's, you know, really everyone can be an advocate for transparency in their daily lives. It can affect many different professions.
That's true. And the corollary to it is it's one of the ways that public officials can build trust with the people they represent. They say, well, but here, look at it. Here's what we're doing. Here are the records that show what we're doing. It is a one of the mechanisms at their disposal in order to effectively represent the people that they serve and to show them that they are doing an appropriate job.
Well, let's get into some red carpet action, if you will, here. The Council's Scoop of the Year Award goes to the investigative series Cash Not Care by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And reporter Mary Spacuzza came on our program when the story was published to talk about prenatal care coordination companies in Wisconsin. Here's Mary talking about these Medicaid-funded businesses for new mothers failing to provide services but still collecting money.
When they filed their paperwork for their nonprofit, it is one person with all of the oversight. They're the only board member, the CEO, the founder, controlling, $1 million a year budget. Another founder that we looked at was making about 42% of the Medicaid money in a year was going just to her salary alone.
Why did this story win the council's Scoopy?
The records were an essential part of reporting this story. Without our public records law, the reporters at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel would not have been able to obtain the information that they did to expose these shadowy businesses that are ripping off the public in this important area. This has to do with infant mortality and the state's high rate of infant mortality, particularly among African Americans. They both shed light on why our mortality rate is so high, and they expose these businesses that are getting paid to do a job that in many cases they're not doing.
What are acceptable reasons for the government to deny a request for records under transparency laws?
Well, I tend to find fewer acceptable reasons than they do, but you can withhold information having to do with some personnel matters, some ongoing negotiations. If you're like trying to come up, you're negotiating to purchase a parcel of land. That's a common situation where a public body might meet in secret to discuss the amounts that they are willing to offer and counter offer and things like that to not give away the ghost. And there are some personnel situations, as I said, where there is a legitimate reason to withhold information. But by and large, public officials are expected to operate with a higher degree of transparency than public employees and public officials than ordinary citizens. And I think that's appropriate.
What are your rights? And then what is your path forward? What are your options if an authority denies your public records request?
Well, there are several things you can do, and one of them is to litigate. If you feel as though a record has been wrongfully denied, you can bring an action against the public agency or official. That's often a protracted and very costly process. We have a problem in the state of Wisconsin that was created by a Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling last year, which kind of undercut the fee recovery mechanism that's part of the law. You're supposed to be able to recover the fees that you had to expend to obtain records that were wrongfully withheld. But the Supreme Court in Wisconsin kind of blew a hole in that by legislating from the bench a requirement that a judge rule on the case before you have the right to sue. And in certain cases, that doesn't happen. So there's now legislation that's been proposed to our Wisconsin legislature by a couple of Republican lawmakers, Representative Todd Novak and Senator Dewey Strobel, which will address this problem simply and easily and permanently by establishing the right of requesters to recover the fees that they had to expend in order to obtain wrongfully denied records.
Bill Leaders heads up the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. This is a group dedicated to open government. Call in with your questions about public records or transparency amid Sunshine Week, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council is a nonprofit group working to protect access to public meetings and records. They announced their OPIE Awards. It stands for Openness in Government, coinciding with National Sunshine Week. Call in about freedom of information, open records, what you wondered about how these requests work. 800-642-1234. Bill Leaders is president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, stays with us. Bill, you're talking about recovering legal fees and the high court, state Supreme Court, upending that practice. I wonder if you can connect it to your Citizen Openness Award and Friends of Frame Park in Waukesha. What happened there?
Okay, well, the case at hand involved a group of citizens in Waukesha who wanted to know more about a proposed baseball stadium that was one of the city parks was going to have a baseball stadium put in for a private operator. And so they requested records. They did not receive the records that they requested. They filed a lawsuit against the city for not providing the records. After the lawsuit was filed, the city released the records. And then the group said, okay, well, we've had to sue you in order for you to provide what you should have provided just for the asking. We want to recover the costs that we incurred to hire an attorney to bring a lawsuit against you. That's an expensive thing to do. And it went to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The authority fought the fee recovery, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided that in a situation in which there is no judicial determination made that the records were wrongfully withheld, but the records were just simply provided after the fact, that the people who had to sue to obtain those records could no longer recover their fees. That's a very bad precedent. It upends that fee recovery mechanism, which is essential to our law. It means that if you are wrongfully denied a record, you have the possibility of spending a great deal of money to obtain that record that was wrongfully withheld, and you'll get nothing in the end. That creates an incentive for the public authority to simply not respond to records requests until they're sued, until someone ponies up a large sum of money to hire a lawyer to sue you, and then you give them the records and they're out of all the money that they spent.
So it means like a government could hold on to public records until a lawsuit is filed and then just turn them over at that point, knowing they won't be on the hook for legal costs because it's a moot point now. They've turned over the records.
Exactly. That's exactly what could happen under this ruling. There's a case that happened in Dane County in which a judge decided that the public official broke the law blatantly and clearly, and yet the judge felt he could not award fees to the people who sued over that because of this Supreme Court ruling that was on the books.
Okay, we're going to move on to the NOPI Award, which goes to the Madison Metropolitan School District, or the No Friend of Openness Award. So this is a negative award, Bill Leaders. Tell us what's going on.
The Madison Metropolitan School District is a notably bad actor when it comes to open records. It has been sued at least 5 times in the last couple of years by requesters who sought records from the school district and either were ignored or denied. Parents trying to find out information about situations that potentially endangered their children. They've been just a terrible player on it. They say, we don't have the staff for it. We have an open position that we haven't filled. Really bad excuses like that. And we wanted to highlight this. This is a case of a public agency that we feel is being abusive in its failure to carry out its responsibilities under our open records law.
And in the interest of transparency here and fairness, we did reach out to the Madison Metropolitan School District for a response, but have not heard anything back as of this morning. So, Bill Leaders, how can transparency by schools, by politicians, other government authorities be improved? What would you say there?
Well, I think they need to learn a lesson from what's happening with the Madison School District. I mean, they've been sued a number of times. The public is ultimately going to be on the hook for some of those costs, at least the cost of the district defending against the lawsuit that it incurred by not following the law. These are all additional costs that are going to be borne by the taxpayer that could have been avoided if the school district just had a different attitude toward records, that they have a responsibility to provide records, and they will do so promptly and fully.
Talking about open government and their annual OPIE Awards, Bill Leaders, president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, you can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Bill, turning this month, a Wisconsin appeals court ruling the state assembly violated open records laws. Assembly had rejected requests by media outlets for documents and then released the documents with redactions. The documents were related to sexual harassment allegations against a former Republican state representative, Stash Grusinski of Green Bay. What is your reaction to the appeals ruling?
Oh, it was a great ruling. They basically said that the assembly violated the law. In fact, they did say that, that the assembly violated the law by not providing information that revealed the actual nature of the allegations against Representative Grusinski. They said, we did an investigation, here's some information from the investigation, but the media requesters wanted more, like, let's see the complaint that was filed against the representative, and the legislature said, no, we're not going to give you that. And the court now at the appellate level, which makes a precedent setting, has said that the assembly violated the law. So it was an appropriate rebuke. In a situation where it never should have been a problem. One of the things I wrote about this case a couple of years ago, and I spoke to Representative Grusinski myself about this, and he supported the release of these records that were being withheld. He wanted those records to be released, and even still, they did not release them when the media requested them.
And I just misspoke here. Grusinski was a Democrat of from Green Bay. In just a minute left or so, can you explain the balancing test and how it works in order to figure out whether there is an ability to release records?
That came into play in this case and often comes into play. Under Wisconsin law, custodians are required to perform a balancing test. They balance the presumed good of releasing a record against the potential harm from its release. And they can make the argument that it would do more harm than good if a record is released. Say it would blow a confidential informant's identity or some such. They can make a public policy justification for not releasing a record if they can argue that the harm from doing so is greater than the good, if they apply the balance in that way. But as what happened in this case, they applied the balance and said, oh, no, there's so much harm is going to come if we let you see what this legislator is accused of, that we're not going to do it. And the courts swooped in and said, no, you have to let the public know.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Bill Leaders is president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, a nonprofit dedicated to open government. You can find a link to all of their OPIE awards at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.